Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello, hello.
What's going on, Devin? Well, tonight we have a special episode. This one we're going to be calling the AOC WHP mashup. If you guys don't know what WHP is, the Working Hands podcast. And we're joined tonight by our co-hosts, two additional co-hosts, Keith Drennan and Tony Woodland from the Working Hands podcast. What's going on, guys?
Not much. Right.
Hey, of course, we talk over each other. Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do.
Hang on, Dust. Real quick, sorry guys, you're blasting with, do the waveforms don't mean anything? I know I'm really low, but Dustin is like peaking. Is that okay?
Should be fine.
Okay. All right. Do you want to start it again or just keep rolling, Dust?
I don't mind. That's fine. This is podcast reality. We're making sure we're all good to go. Everybody's good. Everyone's here. Well, so
I would say back off for Keith. Back off the mic just a hair.
All right.
And I'll lean in a lot more.
That's what happens when you have four podcasters all working together. They did tell me earlier that I was too high, but that's okay. And I did turn it down. So. All right,
Peak
Devin.
Central over there.
I don't know. I'm so used to being like trying to be up close to it, making sure everybody can hear everything. Yeah. Devin, what do you got for us? How are you going to start us off today?
I got two, and we can decide which one we like better. The deepest principle in human nature is to the craving to be appreciated. I'll read it one more time. The deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated. The next one is, be wary of the man who is all hat and no cattle.
He's trying to be appreciated.
All hat and no cattle. Is that like like the sports car, the big shoes?
Right, right.
I like that. I like both of them. I like you said, they kind of both do the same thing. But you know, we were having that conversation about not trying to miss someone when you're relating a story on a podcast, not trying to miss out on somebody because you want, you know, everyone who is there wants to be appreciated.
Craving to be appreciated. Do you think that's why a lot of people start, I mean, other than just the normal wanting to get things done, you think that's why some people become makers because they want to figure out something, a way to be appreciated?
I don't know if it's why they became makers, but it's definitely why some people become makers on Instagram. Mm.
Right. I mean, I think it's human nature to want to make something that is beautiful, and you have your own feeling of beauty. And when you create something, you know, where like art goes back from the beginning of man, cave paintings and things. And depending on what the use of that art was over time, I feel like that there's an appreciation that's built into that art creation that people want. You know, you're doing something and you want to show someone because it's an expression of who you are. But I think you also, there's built into that expression is that appreciation of someone telling you that they like what you did or that it has some meaning to them or it speaks to them in some way. I think that's just naturally built into art. And that's me speaking as a fine artist. I went to art school. I teach art and design and I'm a maker. And I definitely think that there's a part built into it. Maybe not why you start originally, but definitely that's just part of it. That's the part of nature of making things is the reaction to it is people telling you what they think about it and getting criticism, positive or, you know, constructive or negative.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start out of necessity and then they find they're good at something. Kind of like if you play basketball when you're a kid and you find out you're good, you want to keep playing and you look up for pickup games, which I never did because I was never any good at it. But I'll play like baseball and like kickball because it was it was just a necessity following you guys around trying to play sports. And then some I was good at and some you guys just whooped my ass. So I didn't continue to play basketball or continue to make knives, even though my first one was pretty good. My first and last one was pretty good, but there it is.
I think that it's just built in. I think obviously Instagram and YouTube and Facebook, all the social media outlets are a way for people to show what they did and get some feedback on it. Of course, we're all judging ourselves by how many likes and how many subscribers and how many listens and how many views and followers we have, you know, whether you want to or not, it's still a metric that, our society looks at as important now. And I think it is. I mean, I think we're all vain, at least I can speak for myself. We're all vain to an extent, you know, there's something there. Some of us like getting new friends. Some of us don't like new friends. So.
I bet you think that's about you too, don't you?
Yeah, right. Probably think this joke is
don't about you.
Oh, man.
So what do you think, Keith? Good. You said, do you think that people not necessarily like start off making for the recognition, but.
I mean, if you're a maker at heart, you're going to make regardless of whether or not it's appreciated by others. But I do think there are a lot of, this is going to piss people off, but there's a lot of people that started making because they saw it on Instagram as the next fad, you know? Hmm. So they're like, oh, let me start making, or, you know, let me try woodworking or knife making or blacksmithing or whatever. And I'll post it online, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they're definitely going for the, what was the word at the end of that quote? Appreciation?
Appreciation. Yeah. Yeah. Looking for appreciation. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Validation that way.
Yeah. I like how you kind of put that as, you know, if you're a maker, an artist or a designer or creator at heart, you're going to do it no matter what. I said it to my students, like, you know, we are not artists and designers by what we're making. We're artists and designers by who we are. You know, it's something that it's like, you know, when you're a little kid, you start drawing because you love to draw and it sticks with you. But I think as you become better at it, then you get that recognition, you get that acclamation from people being like, oh, this is really good, you should try more, like you were saying, Devin, you know, like once you start, people start recognizing that you're good at it, or you think that you're good at it, then you do it more and more. It's like you get the inspiration or enthusiasm behind it because people appreciate what you're doing. I think more you're appreciated, the more you want to do it.
It's easy to impress in regular life and much harder online. So I mean, I think people do it the wrong way. You start putting your first things up online and you're not going to impress anyone, but you bring that knife you made to your buddies or to your family or to like a Thanksgiving, people are going to freak out. Like, wait, you made this like out of like nothing and wood? And you're like, yeah, I made it and I glued it. Like you glued a knife. Like, yeah, that's how you put the handles on. So yeah, it's not a bad way to start. Start showing the stuff to the people around you, and they'll probably freak out. They'll probably love it.
Yeah, that'll get you the validation to keep going.
Right, right.
Online, I'll come around. Hopefully,
even though Dustin does do a lot of, or maybe not first projects. It's like, all right, Dust, you make one of something, and the second one we'll make a video out of. So it's like a lot of projects are like your second go at something. Like, oh, well, now we did one, so I think I can like, I'll show how it's done now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think but that's also like years of making things.
Yeah.
So
right.
It's like, let me try one so I know what I'm doing, so I know how to tell it.
Right.
And obviously, if it's something that I'm like not sure about, then I preempt it with that. Be like, this is the first time ever doing this. So we're just bringing you along for the ride on the video. So hopefully you guys can enjoy it, learn something from me.
This is not a how to.
Yeah, right. Exactly. This is a how it was done, whether it was done right or not. Thinking about making quality things, Keith and Tony, you guys have started and have continued the tradition of the Maker Camp Maker Swap. And this year's announcement podcast just came out recently last week on your podcast. So for people who aren't familiar with what the Maker Swap is, obviously you've listened to this podcast, you've heard Devin and I rant about it all the time and what we think is what people should put in and what you might not want to put in. I love it. Who came up with the idea, and then like, how did you guys first propose it to Austin at Maker Camp?
I came up with the idea. Okay. And how I came up with it was, there was a time in, it was during, well, I came up with an idea for everyone to showcase their skill set at the end of the 2019 Maker Camp, which was the first one. Jimmy was like the big guy there, you know. He helped Austin get it off the ground and everything. So at the end, he gave a little speech, and he's like, so in 2020, we want it to be to share your skills, you know, like we want this to be a Skillshare event. And he went on and on about the speech about Skillshare, blah, blah, blah. So in my head, that was there, and I'm like, I got to do something, you know. And I was like, I guess I could teach, but, you know, whatever, I'm not going to do that, you know. So I was trying to come up with an idea, and online I saw a bunch of people making stuff and posting it, and they were all making the same thing. And I won't say what it was, but everyone was making the same thing. And I could tell that it was a lot of, camera tricks to make them look good. So I was like, what we should do is have everyone bring their item. And originally it was going to be like a contest. Like we would have somebody judge for the best one of this one item or something. I'm like, that doesn't really make sense, because you can't really choose, let's just say, a cutting board, right? No blacksmith's going to want to do a woodworking project. So then I had to come up with a different idea. So I came up with the idea of the swap in the end. And how it was presented to Austin at first is a whole nightmare I'm not going to get into. but it was put out there. Exciting. And well, maybe in the after show of the next episode.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
He was into it, and he's like, yeah. And I only expected like 20 items. And that first year, what we get, Tony, like 100 and something. So
I think we were close.
I think it was 102, 103, somewhere in there.
Yeah, we were right in there.
Yeah, I remember there being a lot of items on that table. I was like,
yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And we were announcing each one like a typical old school raffle. You'd have to wait for somebody to hear their number because they're not paying attention, walk up, and that sucked. The idea of the Maker Swap is to bring something that shows off your skill, right, in person. And then you're going to enter that into, I guess, like a drawing. It's not a one-for-one swap. It's not like Devin exchanges with Tony, right?
Right.
And they both get each other's. It's randomized, and everyone's going to go home with an item. If you entered something, you're going to go home with another Maker's item. So that's how it works. And the idea of it is to show off your skill set. So bring something that you made at home, not at Maker Camp, in your shop, with your skills on your skill set, something you're proud of, something that encompasses your top skill, some of your best skills, whatever it is, bring that item that another maker is going to go home with. So you really kind of want to impress, because it's going to go maker to maker. Like Devin was saying earlier, it's not going maker to family member where they're going to appreciate whatever you want, you know?
Right, exactly.
It's going maker to maker. Whoever gets it's going to analyze the crap out of it and be like, I could have done this in 15 minutes. Somebody entered this. So use your head when you're thinking about what you're going to put in there. But as long as it's your top skill, that's all we ask.
Yeah, I have gotten decent things each year. And each year I've had a conversation with the person that I've gotten it from after I've gotten it, which actually really helps, right? Because then you can get the little tidbits behind what it is, right? So like last year I got Gary Colum. He made a box that was made out of, I think, curly maple or something. And then when I got it, I talked to him afterward, and he was like talking about how he went to like a Christmas tree farm, and he found there was a guy, he had a big old pile of firewood, and it was all this beautiful curly maple. So he asked him if he could take a couple pieces, and the guy gave him a few. And it was just sitting in the shop for a while, and then he milled it down, he created all this wood out of it. It was beautiful. And then he book matched it all the way around. And he told me the story, and it made it that much more interesting. Yeah. And not that it was not an interesting thing on its own, but there was something to that, something to the relatability, the story of that actual piece, which I thought was really cool. So I know that you guys have like said in the past, you know, or like, you know, post about, or we've said like, let's post about it right away. And then if someone's around, they can hopefully, you know, you can have a conversation about it. I don't know if there's a way to build that in, but I always thought that that has really, made my item that much better, each year. So,
I mean, if people are posting about it and they tag Working Hands, we'll share it. So who's ever following us can see,
yeah,
you know, that would probably be the best way to get it out there. But most people don't even post about it.
Right.
Like there's very few people that use the hashtag. This year, the hashtag is WHP Makerswap. And nice. I bet 20 people post about it and the rest of the people don't. And then they put something in. So it's hard to get the stories unless you're there.
Yeah. 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 I was, I just held up to the camera. I have the Maker Camp 2022. There's a Shane Mooney made a leather koozie with the brass stamp Maker Camp 2022 on it. And I actually saw him post about that, like, you know, throughout his making it. And then I got it from the swap. So I was like, sweet. it was cool, but because I knew the story beforehand. And then I also knew Shane, you know, it was cool to talk to him about it.
Yeah. But, maybe have to like, because it's hard to get anyone to like any prompt we've ever given, whether it's on the podcast or on the channel, even if you get 100,000 likes or views on it, then maybe 1,000 people think about it. Then 100 people might do it. And then 5 people like spend money on doing whatever you've asked to do. So it's like in person, you feel like you'd get a higher percentage of people like sharing and doing that. Maybe have to offer, I mean, but see, you also don't want it to be about that, but maybe you like, right. If anyone shares, we'll give one person gets like a gift card to whatever, just make sure you share it. And at the end, we'll, you know, a week later after Maker Camp, we'll also like, just to keep it in people's heads, a week later, we'll draw something for whoever posted something. You'll get $100 gift card to, you know, something abrasives or wherever.
Yeah. Sabertooth.
Yeah. Saber too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Yeah, it's like if you can give an incentive, get more people to post right. about it. But I mean, I think, right. And obviously it's not something that has, it's not gotten smaller. I'll say that. Like right. it's mm-hmm. gotten bigger and bigger each year, which is awesome. I know you guys had like your whole trailer set up and everything and the whole like area with shelves and everything set up this year, which is really, or last year, which was really cool.
Would have been a lot cooler if it didn't rain the whole time.
Yeah. and that's the second year we've had a trailer set up to secure the items and stuff. So it's been
we've had a trailer each year.
Do we have it?
Yeah, the first year it was around the corner.
Yeah, okay. I remember
it was
that
hidden.
Now.
But there's too much to move, you know.
Yeah.
So the closer it is to the shelving units and the drop off, the better.
Right. Yeah, it was nice to have that like one. I mean, it's been the same. It's been one location each year, but at least not like last year you guys had this own little tent set up, which was cool, you know, and you could kind of have them on display. I guess last year you did put everything into the trailer until you displayed it on like the last day or whatever it was or something like that.
Yeah. We had everything out on display on Friday. We had everything out Saturday morning. And then when there was water building up under the tent, we decided we're just going to put everything in the trailer and call it just because one item did get wet and luckily it was my entry, so I didn't feel so bad about it. And the guy who got it's like, don't worry about it, it's awesome anyway. So that part was cool, but we do want to have it out on display. The problem is the looky-loos, you know, like I don't want to sit at the swap table all day. Right. And there's always people picking stuff up. We've had things break in the past and some things walk. So we have to kind of keep it organized the best we can. Yeah. But leaving things out on display, it's fun to see everyone come by and ooh and ah, and everyone picks out something different. Like there are always those standout things. Like last year, everyone loved the Scott's maker sign, the Wesley Treat maker sign.
Yep.
People were oohing on over that. Yeah. And the amount of time, effort, and everything he put in. What is his handle, Tony? Do you remember?
Crabtree?
Crabtree Creative.
Oh, that's Crabtree. Okay.
I just want to give him a little shout out. But yeah, everyone was oohing on over that because it was big and it was out there. But then as they would walk down, they would pick out something else. And you're like, you like that? You know, like, like it's like, oh, and then the next person that comes down finds something else that they're like, oh, I hope I get that. Or I hope I get, and that's cool. And then you have the, like the whole idea of it is to have people show off what they made. Now, as I said on our other episode, we don't want people coming over and picking stuff up, even if it's their entry, because those shelves are there placed in a way that it's going to be safe, but that's only safe for who's ever putting it on and putting it up and knows that the shelving unit rocks a little bit or whatever.
Yep.
We don't want people coming over and knocking something else over, or heaven forbid, we're out five items then, you know?
Yeah.
So we have to kind of police that and watch it. So we can't leave it out throughout the duration of Maker Camp. But people do come over and they look and say, this is what I made. Have a conversation about it.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's, that's one of the more fun parts about it is being able to see what's there. Because that's, you know, it's your only chance. Like you said, you know, some people post about it, but not a ton of people post about what they're making. So it's your chance to really see what everyone is putting in. I think that's so cool. You know, that's
but also you don't want people coming up and touching them really, because you don't know who has what, or you can't be expected to keep track of all that. And it's, I mean, most people,
we had 160, 170 items last year, and we did have people come up and they must've been talking with someone, said, oh, I made this for the swap. And then they would come over and they grab their item and show somebody. You kind of do want to let people do that. But at the same time, like Keith said, if you're moving a shelving unit that's sitting on top of mud.
Yeah. Right.
it could just have a catastrophic failure that all of a sudden we're out a bunch of items, and it's
right.
And it's tough, 'cause you do want people to be able to show their stuff, but you just look, don't touch once we have it is probably the best.
Yeah. So basically I'm on the hunt for velvet ropes is what I'm doing this year.
Oh, and I'm fancy.
I'm going to rope it off. If I can't get velvet ropes, it's going to be caution tape.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of do not touch signs, like look, come up. Like, we want everyone to see everything. Right.
Yeah.
But
I was thinking with your personality, Keith, it would be like barbed wire, not velvet rope.
Listen, you got to keep some things safe. At night,
They have those anti-bear electric fences you can put up. They have those. They'll zap you if you get too close.
Yeah, but at one point we're going to fry a little guy and he's going to pop off the ground and hit the shelving unit. So we want people to get close to it, just not touch it. So.
I think it should be right. It should be like a thing that's like, once you've turned it over, it's no longer yours. You know, don't touch it.
Yeah. We're trading it for a ticket, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
And we do have to play on on one other side of it is that people want their stuff on display. So we have to, you know, take knives and unsheathe them. That's stuff that we're trying to get better at. But I think this year, hopefully I won't be there. So I'm kind of talking for Keith here, but that's just something that we're learning over time is like, we do need to present items at the same time, not just collect, because people do want to see what's there.
Yeah, I actually did the second year. So the first year I made a marking knife, and I had it. I made like a little custom box for it, and it was all sat inside nice and like cozy in there. But then you couldn't see it when it was on display. So the second year I made a chisel knife with measurements and stuff on it. And I made a box that had a whole open lid on top with my logo going across it. So you could see through it. I was like, you know, you want people to see what you have. Yeah, and again, that goes back to that quote, Dev, you know, like people want that little appreciation of this. And last year I just figured I'd make a gigantic mallet, which worked well. Did you guys, was it, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was you, Keith, or somebody else, but I walked up to get my item when we were collecting, and I had my ticket and I had Stephen DeForest's ticket because he had to leave early. So I gave mine first, and then I gave the other one. I was like, this one's mine, this one's for Stephen DeForest. And so whoever came back had the box that I got from Gary Kolum, and then they had my mallet that I made. And they were like, here you go. This is, I was like, wait, what? And so I got my item back, but it was like, Steven, I got it for him. And he was like, that's so awesome. So I ended up shipping it to him. But I thought that was, I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, for a second, I was like confused. I'm like, how am I getting this back?
So you, this whole way. You are not only one of the friends that had to pick up somebody's item, but you also are one of the people that had to ship your item because you made it too big.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic.
Well, I only had to ship it because I had to ship it back to him because he doesn't live where I live. And I was just like, he wasn't going to be able to stay. And I was like, oh, well, he asked me beforehand. He was like, hey, if I get something, you mind grabbing it and shipping it to me? Like, you know, he said he'd pay for it. And also it wasn't a big deal, but it was kind of fun.
One other rule I probably should lay out there is if you put in something that's too big, because we have people who come from all over the world to Maker Camp. If you put in something that's too big for them to put in their carry-on, it's up to you to ship it to whoever gets it. So keep that in mind with whatever you decide to make.
Yeah. I did have that in on the big mallet that I made. I was like, if just reach out to me. I'm around. Here's my phone number. Here's my Instagram. You know, send me a message when you get this. I'll be happy to ship it. But I remember that from last year. I remember you guys saying that. Yeah. It's too big.
I'm not shipping it.
Right, exactly.
I'm pretty vocal about that.
I feel like so much of this and Maker Camp is, it's still a relatively small thing, and it's a lot of these things that we're able to do, it's because people haven't ruined them yet. Like, and then every year there's gonna be more and more rules, only because you're figuring it out and going, well, we can't do this next year, and this didn't work, and this was too slow. If everyone just was cool about it and stopped bitching, we wouldn't have so many rules anyway. So it's like, just especially if someone's all these things, a lot of people are it's, you're doing it for free and you're trying to spread this goodwill and this cool event. And a lot of, you've got volunteer help, and you can tell that you guys are just other makers trying to get something cool going. And anyone who complains or like has some type of issue with something like that, it's ridiculous. And then, it almost makes you want to go like, all right, here's your thing back. Or like, you don't get to play. You don't get to play now. I'm sorry. You failed the test. You're an asshole. You're not playing with us anymore.
Right. Yeah.
We've been close.
I came real close last year. You would be, out of, let's just say it's 170 items, right? Out of 170 items, I would say I don't hear from about 100 of those people, good or negative. But that other 70, and that could be a high number, maybe there's a fraction of them that are negative, but that's all you think about all year. Because I hear about it all year, like, oh, you did the swap, well, I got a piece of shit item. So I don't know if I can swear here, but...
Yeah,
sure. Or I got this, it's trash. Like, why was that in there? Or you made me wait too long. Or my item wasn't on display in the right spot. How come I didn't get, eye level on the third shelf? In, like,
oh my God. Dustin.
Just let it be something cool and just be in awe of everyone's talent that's in it, And then there's the lottery ticket people who even I can't stand, but I do hear about those all the time. So,
and that's just some that I think
it's a term we've come up with for someone who's like just makes an item like
so they can hopefully get something cool,
makes a small so that they can get that big, thinking that they could get whatever they think is the best item on the wall there,
right?
Yeah, and that's, I gotcha. We've tried. I think that's become less and less, but
yeah,
we're curbing it. But I mean, there's 1,000 people that go to Maker Camp. Like, how am I going to reach all 1,000 people that are coming and making something for the swap who've heard about it? Like,
well, I mean,
they don't all listen to us. So
the first year we did have people say like, just make something and you'll get something. And that's not people that were involved with the swap. It was just people like, just make something and you'll get something. And it's like, that's, and that kind of rolled into year two, but now it's starting to, that's starting to be squashed because you have a lot of people come up and they're like, I don't know if my item's good enough. Like we've had those conversations.
Yeah.
And we're starting to have more and more of them because of like, you see the level that people are bringing is getting better and better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's,
I also don't want to have that conversation. So if you're that much on the fence that you got to come ask me, probably not.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you're hesitant. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're hesitant, you don't think that what you made is the same quality as what's around you, then maybe like, you know, maybe walk up and down the aisles, take a look at what's already there and then make your decision. If you think that what's there is, you know, you're happy to get it and you think that somebody else would be happy to get yours that you are proud of, then cool. I think that's one thing that I've always kind of thought of is like, would I want to go home with my own item? You know, it's something that I really like. And I think, you know, if you can say that, you know, if for some reason, like it was completely random and you got your own item back, would you be happy to walk away with that? If so, then okay, maybe that's good enough. And the other thing is, you know, it's like, you know, if you're walking up and I don't know. I just feel like it's got to be something that you're proud of and something that you put some time and effort into. I also think that you need to go into it with the mindset that you are giving something that you're really proud of to someone else. Hopefully you get something cool back. If you're one of the quote unquote unlucky people that got someone's like random crappy item that you don't think they put enough time and effort into, then you need to be happy with that. I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of, I've had conversations with other people who have not been happy with their items. And I'm like, well, I don't know what, yes, of course you want to get something back, but I also think you got to go into it with that mindset of like, I want to be proud that someone gets my item.
Yeah. But I feel like it is fun to bitch about a little bit. And as long as they're not coming to the run, like the guys who are running things and doing things, like don't come to them. You can bitch to your friend, be like, look at this. It's a piece of junk, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. That's luck of the draw there, but.
Right. But it's not, it's not your guys.
But yeah, there is a point where some items, like if I get a blacksmithing item, I'll probably be happier with that than getting a woodworker's item because it's just not my interest or it's not something I have a use for. Like, there is that part of it too. And then sometimes some people take that as an offense because they're like, well, this isn't anything I'll use. It's like, but it was totally random. Like this whole thing is random. Yeah. Like we don't sit there and go, well, we don't know whose number we have in our hand when we go and lay it down on an item. The only thing we know is that we're not putting the same number on the same ticket. Like that's all we're trying to do is just make sure everything's so that we don't get that person gets their own item. That's the only thing we have for a system on how these things are done.
Right. Yeah.
We have that and no item gets lost. No ticket gets like there's a lot to it.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm not going to figure out, oh, so woodworkers can only go to woodworkers or this is a blacksmith tool. So it can only go to, I don't care about that. I'm just randomizing it, and putting it out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's nothing that says you can't white elephant it later and wait by the table and wait for somebody for the thing you want and be like, hey, I just got a blacksmithing hammer that I'll never use. Can I trade you?
Yeah. There has been some horse trading post give it. Like that happened last year with a couple items. I'm 99% sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, once it's out of your guys' hands, it's out of your hands. You know, that's like up to the people around you. Like if people want to trade, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But you know, I think just as a purely as someone who wants to take part, yes, of course I want to get something cool. And I love looking through the whole thing. And I love being like, how cool is that? You know, Jimmy Duresta put in his fake Black Raven axe that he made last year. And that was freaking awesome. That would have been like my number one pick because I'm an axe guy, you know, it's like what I want, but that's, you know, out of 170 items, I didn't think I would get it, you know, but I was like, whatever I get, that'd be cool. You know, and I'm happy. And I hope the person that gets my thing, like who needs a giant wooden mallet? Nobody really, but it was just like a really cool big thing that I was really proud of that I put some like time and effort into. And I just thought it'd be a cool, like, you know, someone walk away with this big thing. So,
yeah, that person who got it there's going to be, I mean, they're never going to timber frame anything probably, But they will. They'll be like, they'll be like building a shed 5 years from now and be like, we got these 4x4s. Like, we got to scoot it over a little bit. Like, everything's out of plumb. Just, and then he comes out with it and just
he's like, wait.
Yeah.
In reality, he's going to dress up as Gallagher for Halloween.
Yeah. Where's, you need your watermelon.
Get the watermelon.
That'll be my lottery ticket item, a watermelon with the Maker Camp things etched into it from the laser, and then I'll just
yeah. Oh man, I like that addition to your guidelines this year though. It was like no Maker Camp logos.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I mean, we all love the Maker Camp, right? You're teaching there now, you've been there a few times. Joni and I have carved out our little portion of it, trying to promote it. We talk about it almost every week on the podcast. Like, we love it. What I don't want to get is a Maker Camp logo on the swap. And I've heard that from so many people. They're like, hey, this is the third year I participated, in the third year I'm going home with a Maker Camp logo. I'm like, I get it. I hear you. You know? So this year I was just like, all right, we're done with Maker Camp. Like, a third of the items are Maker Camp.
Last year was logo heavy.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
So just no logos. I mean, if I look at your piece and it's 90% logo or 50% logo, no. You want to put it small in a corner just to be like, right, oh, this is where this came from. That's acceptable. But no, I don't want Maker Camp logos.
Yeah.
I think it's, use some creativity.
Yeah. That's what we said last week. I was like, you know, using the Maker Camp logo is like, yeah, you come away with a thing that gives you this souvenir from the event. Yeah. Okay. But like, it's almost a creative cop out. Like, oh, I got the logo, I can just do something around it. Well, yeah, but as soon as you can't use the logo, then you have to be creative, like you said, Keith, and you have to use your own creativity. You know, what's your thing? Like, make your thing, make something that's important to you, that's special to you, that you really like, that you're into, and then, you know, make it.
Not
well
to mention,
someone else will be.
There is a print tent there that's printing out Maker Camp logo signs all weekend, right?
Yeah. If you want
our buddy Dave Bauer and, what is Smith Makes first name? I don't even know. But they make crazy stuff over there, and everything just gets given away. So
or you can powder coat one up at Mancrafting. Like, and you can buy a t-shirt. Like,
you could buy a hat. Like, Maker Camp do their own logos.
Right.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The swap isn't run by Maker Camp. It's run by Tony and I and my wife. Like, that's what it is. It's not it's just our tent at Maker Camp, you know?
You're not getting any Maker Camp logo royalties, so.
Right. Yeah.
10% extra.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, white, or black seedless grapes for $1.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you don't have the skill, at least be humble enough, like myself, not to add any trash to the pile. Just bring your best thing if you can do it. And it's as fun for me just to watch people get stuff and to look at everything. I'm never going to put something in, but it's still fun to watch people and see what they get. So you don't have to put it. there's a million other things in there. I can't shoot a video for someone. Maybe, you know, you can't put that on the shelf. So I'll never do that.
Personal documentary.
Gift certificate for 1 hour video.
I'll follow you around all day today and I'll edit you up something.
Day three at Maker Camp, the second half of day three.
Me packing up my stuff and leaving. It's going to be a great documentary.
Especially because the only thing that happens after that pretty much is the barbecue.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's good. Nice. Do we know, is there not going to be a burn again this year? Is that totally done now?
No. With the middle, like the whole big field is completely taken up with tents now. So there's no big open area.
Oh, okay.
I guess, but
what's in the middle now?
Tents. We're in the middle.
Where they had the yurts and where they had the flint napping. And
you weren't there last year.
Yeah,
you had just had a child.
And I was a stupid baby.
You had to be there for your wife. I don't understand what that's.
She kept saying you got to come.
She can't handle that on her own.
I know. All right. All right.
All right. I got your. I got your back. I'm out because of family this year, so I got your back. On that.
Every once in a while. Thank you.
That's horrible.
But yeah, they had like two yurts in the middle. Total boat. The total boat tent went out into the middle. Our tent was up there.
Was it just, is that to bring everybody closer? Like they're not doing the tents along that back edge now?
Oh no, it's awful.
They're all there. Yeah.
Yeah. There was still the back edge. Like Ronders and that crew were doing like the chainsaw milling and that.
Yep.
The
whole woodworking tent.
The,
on the side.
Was it the rock there. And roll chainsaw corner? Was it?
No, that, he was not.
Chainsaw carving.
But they still had, like, Sabretooth was up in the corner, up in the far back corner. Lincoln was down on the lower corner doing their thing again. The sewing tent was down on that lower side again. Silversmithing and some other things were done in a tent on that back edge.
The printmaking, Dave Bauer, that was still on that far edge. But then that whole middle we had, there was the tool restoration tent. That was cool.
You go in
and, like, grab a tool and, like, you know, wire wheel it and stuff. They had that there. That's awesome.
They had coffee station.
Free coffee
or something
there.
Dude,
how cool was that?
Then they had the yurts with the pottery and the flint napping.
Broadbeck tent was there in the middle doing the grinding. That was there too.
And then even if you come up out of the pavilion and you're going towards like the fire pit, that there was even tents off to the right going out to the pool that way.
Yeah, that's where
there's tents everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah,
brunt stone carving.
Did they have any? Did they have any? I remember they were selling stuff. They had like it was like a mini flea market. Did they get rid of that, or they still have that?
They have that, but it's actually off the field. That's
on that street in the middle.
Yeah, it's on that street.
Yeah, it's there again. Yep. Yeah, so the same place it was the year that we did the timber frame bridge. How they had it there, but they had like more people there. Yeah, so.
I got that cool $2 knife that I should have bought, like, he must have got a hold of a bunch of them. He had, like, 30. I should have bought, like, 3. It's so cool.
It was just, a folding knife with no scales on it.
This is a folding knife.
So it's, like,
real
thin,
folding knife,
metal.
Like a skeleton knife. But, you know, $2, so you can lose it. Well, now I don't want to lose it. Now it's my favorite $2 knife.
Yeah.
All right,
a $2 knife.
So, Maker Camp, let's do a couple of the things we normally do, Dust. Because I guess we didn't even start out with it. We want to do the first half will be on our pod, and then the second half will be on theirs.
Right, right.
Describe that, Dust?
Yeah, so...
If you're this far in, now you go learn.
It's too late now. Yeah, right.
You're in.
Yeah. So we're recording... We're doing a double podcast. We're calling it the mashup. So we're going to record twice as long. And the first half will go on to our podcast, which will come out on Friday, whatever date that is. Today is the 8th, so that's the 8 plus 5. So on Friday, ours will come out. And then on the following Wednesday, Keith and Tony will put the Working Hands podcast out with the second part of it. So this first half will come out on our channel on the on Friday. And because of that, that's why we kind of let it off. And we do want to do our normal stuff. So Keith and Tony, we mentioned about, you know, we love having guests on and we love asking them their disaster stories because we love to know when people screw up. What are you going to say, Beth?
I was going to say before that, we used to go into a long thing like, hey, tell us all about the beginning of your life and all the stuff and how you got into Maker stuff. And that's all good. But I was like, can we condense it? Because I feel like every time I read like a biography, the first 100 pages is like their mom. And like, I just want to know when Jimi Hendrix picked up his first guitar. Start the biography there. I don't need to know what elementary school he went to.
Have you tried to look up a recipe online recently?
Oh my gosh.
So this means in the summer of 2020. Yeah, no, I just want to know.
The clover was growing in great. I saw a bee touching the clover flowers. And I thought this is a good time for a steak.
Exactly. So can you guys give us the abridged version, or is it unabridged? Which one is it?
The abridged.
Abridged
version of what, like how you guys got into making and how you got into
and your love of the first couple things that you made. You're like, oh, this is great. And then the podcast. Tony, you want to go first? Give us the The speedy version?
Asking for the speedy version from this guy. Oh, man.
Settle in, boys.
Yeah, settle in. This is going to take a while. No, for me, it was mainly when I went started into the trades and started working more with metal and welding and that kind of stuff. I kind of started to really want to do more. I just found that blacksmithing was kind of what I enjoyed more of it, like more of just heating and bending and twisting stuff. And it's kind of where I got me started. Hmm. And then that was probably 2000, give or take. But then I didn't buy an anvil till I think it was 2017, and then really didn't get my shop and everything that I have existing now until like 2018, 2019. And then just been going to classes and doing things and just going to events. And that's just how I've learned and picked up what I know at this point.
So before then, what'd you move metal on?
I really didn't do any moving metal unless it was in a shop, surroundings or whatever. It was always cut and weld. I never really got into the actual forming with a hammer and anvil until like would have been like 2017, 2018.
Hmm. So what, in that time period, you said you started getting interested in it in like 2000, but then wasn't until 2017 that you really started doing it on your,
yeah.
Like on
so
what'd you do for 17 years?
well, that was more or less building a career to the point where I could afford to do some of this stuff. So, yeah. like I started in school with, like I say, I started doing some welding and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I guess, yeah, it was more or less just building a career and then getting to a point where I had the money to do and to build out the shop and to buy the tools and to, because I'm kind of that guy. I want to have, like, I know I can do it with a block of steel, but I want to do it on an anvil.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. So yep. that's kind of where I got hung up. If I were to do it again tomorrow, I think I would, if I like reset tomorrow, I would probably just grab an anvil shaped object, like, mm-hmm. like just a block of steel and use it and be fine. But there's so many more options now. Like when I built my forge, you couldn't go up and buy a Mr. Volcano type, you know, $150 right. forge. You had to spend, you know, $1,000+ to get, you know, a basic forge. Right. So there wasn't the options, and like the NC forges and stuff that were out there. They were like $1,300-$1,400 for me to buy here in Canada. And they were all like three burner and just big, oversized for what I needed. And I couldn't. So I just was like, all right, I'm going to build something that works for me. So I ended up building my own with the ribbon burner. So try to be efficient nice. With it.
Nice. You went right for the ribbon burner. That was good.
Yeah. This is a YouTube university that put me onto it. And I haven't looked back.
That's great, man. That's life. That's what we did. That's what I did as well. I had my first little forge was just to be able to do some just heat treating of knives. And I just made a bucket, you know, I had a bucket trash can, a metal bucket that I have that I used plaster of Paris and sand for my refractory and just did a little port out the side. And I think I used maybe a 3-inch PVC pipe or a 4-inch PVC pipe for the middle. And so it was just like, I had a port and I would just use a little blowtorch in the side. That thing worked surprisingly well to heat up, you know, anything that was like under maybe 5 inches, you know, it would be good. I could heat up the blade.
So the forge I have now is a forge I started with. I built it and I've relined it a couple times at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky enough that the city I'm in is pretty industrial. So there's some companies around that you can get stuff from. And there is a refractory company actually found out a guy we grew up like 10 miles away from each other. And, nice. And anyways, it was just able to get materials and it's been easy since then. So
right on. Yeah. That was once I, same thing when I started, you know, really wanted to get more into actually blacksmithing, then I built a brick forge with a two burner brick forge. And when my grandmother passed away, she had like in her actual bank account, like her whatever, like she had a small checking account and it was like a couple $100 in it or something. So my dad took it out and split it between us four, my my three brothers and myself, the four of us, was like, you know, you each have $200 or something. What do you want to spend it on? So I actually used that money.
I don't think I got that.
Dang, maybe it was just the three older brothers.
It's probably just Dustin. We've talked about this before. When there's something that dad can give away, it goes to Dustin. Let's just be honest here.
Oh,
I didn't want to bring it. I didn't want to bring a family business.
Which
now,
number is Dustin?
I'm number three out of four.
Dustin's like, when
same
I
thing
got
in my family.
Yeah, right on.
Dustin's like, when I got my $2,000, I'm like, I got $50.
I only spent, no, it's like $170. I got the double burners from, I forget where I got them from, but
yeah,
like no, Ken's custom iron or something. But yeah,
it's Derek, Drew, Dustin, and me. So
yeah, yeah, and we have so Derek and Drew are older, my two older brothers. Derek's the oldest, and then Drew, and then me. We're all like 1, 2, 3, pretty close in age. And then Devin's a baby. He's like 4.5 years younger than I am, almost 5 years younger.
So. Whoopsie.
Yeah, I have three brothers too. I'm the youngest. So
Right on. Hold it down. a few of the early videos we have on YouTube are still there. Is Dustin using that little
bucket forge?
And it always worked. That worked well.
Yeah.
I had a hard time. I wanted to build it and build it once. And that's, mm-hmm. I had a hard time like starting with that small forge. I wanted something I could work with right away and have it for, I wanted to build a project once and just not have to mess with it again. And I really have been lucky with this. I managed to design it in a way that I had to reline it once because I really did a poor job on the refractory. And that was on me. And then the second time it was much better. And it's what's running right now. Like that's what I've been able to use. And it's in really good shape at this point. So
nice.
Yeah. That is the great thing about YouTube and watching videos. Like I think we all do it. You find a video that you like, okay, this is what I'm looking for. The explanation is clear. And you watch it a few times. And it's just like you get to do it like you would learning from somebody. So then when you attack it, you've already got the map in your head. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I remember that's where I was looking for this. That's right. And he said something about that. It's like you've already done it a few times.
And I tend to not take a single source either. So I looked at a few I kind of mine is amalgamation of a few different projects that I saw out there. So it just, I've always been that way. I don't like taking single sources. So I tend to ask a bunch of questions or just, especially with YouTube, you're not asking a bunch of questions. You're just trying to take in all the information and just trying to find everything that you can. Mm-hmm. Like on the refractory side of things, there's all kinds of videos. On the ribbon burner side of things, there's all kinds of videos. Like you can find it, whatever you want on there. You just have to take the time.
It really throws off your YouTube algorithm. Like you watch for like 2 weeks straight, whatever project you're working on. And all of a sudden it's like, all right, I don't just want to watch how to replace headlights on my Ford F-150. I understand, but I have other interests.
Yeah, I do find YouTube does change the algorithm on you pretty quickly.
Yeah,
it's like one search and all of a sudden that's all you get.
one search, a girl trying on bikinis, and then you think that's all I want to watch.
It's a family show here, man.
All right, so Keith will ask you the same question. How did you kind of get in? How did the maker life get into your life? And then you guys can both follow up at the end of like how did you start? How did you guys meet? And how did Working Hands start?
Well, first Keith was hatched. We'll just start with that.
Hatched
like a gremlin.
You used to be like a cute cuddly creature and someone threw water on you.
Somebody threw water and fed him after midnight.
Definitely fed him after midnight.
No new friends. I started as a kid, you know, like with Legos, or like we had these things called constructs. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I love constructs.
And I always remembered Erector sets. I used to love doing all that stuff. And then, you know, as you grow up, you know, just working around the house with my dad or my uncles or my brothers or whatever, building stuff, working on the house, doing whatever. It always intrigued me. And then middle school wood shop. And then in high school, I took as many shop classes as I could. And then I went to be a shop teacher in college, which never materialized. But
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm not a teacher, but yeah. So it's just one of those things that's always been there. So it's not like it's, I don't know. You know, I got into cars for a while. So, you know, just it's a pretty boring story, I guess. There's no like one, there's no like one thing, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that's
yeah, cool. That's kind of how, I mean, a similar story to me is just always making stuff and always people around me making stuff. And my dad was always really frugal. You know, we didn't have a ton of money growing up. So it was like, well, we can build it ourselves. We would build stuff. Like, you know, I wanted a skateboard when I was a kid and my dad was like, oh, we could make you a skateboard. Yeah. Cause I think I'd broken my skateboard or something. And so he was like, well, let's just cut out the form. And I remember him talking about, I don't think we ever did it. Cause my dad was always busy.
Dad made four boys.
But we definitely cut out the wood form, but we never like bent the tail up. We have like a, you know, one of the whale boards. He was like, well, it's fine. We can just wet it and heat it and then we'll bend it. We'll put some weight on it. That never happened. But yeah, it was always just like, just always doing stuff, you know, just always making stuff. And it was out of like, you know, when we were kids, we wanted bows and arrows. So we made our own bows and arrows. And then, you know, it's like, then, okay, well now I want this thing. And I, like you said, with like cars, our brother Drew, our next older brother, he's really good with like motors and engines and stuff. That's just what he's always, his mind's always worked that way. So he's always fixing his car and stuff. And he's got all the tools. His shop is like set up for car stuff. So anytime there's a car thing, I'm like, call up Drew. I'm like, hey man,
it's the way to go.
Come help me out on this. And then he's like, yeah, you know, and then if there's like a wood thing or a metal thing, he's like, hey, you want to come help me out? So we say that in the event of apocalypse, through our brothers, we have like all the needs covered. So we'll be able to
and even a documentary.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, a
few weeks of battery life, I'll get the really good stuff, the start of it.
And then 10 years later when TV has come back, you hit gold.
Oh
yeah. Nice.
Yeah, we grew up on like a little hobby farm, so there's always stuff to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So do we. Very similar.
Very similar.
So then how'd you guys meet? How'd you meet and start Working Hands? Cause you used to have Chad, right? As well.
The Chad.
Yeah. I remember the first year that you guys did the maker swap. I came up to the table to turn my stuff in and the three of you were there and I was talking to all three of you and you guys were like, oh man, it's so cool. I'm so glad you're here. So I'm glad you're hanging out and doing this stuff with us. And Chad was like, yeah, I love your YouTube channel. And that was one of the, you know, the first times, obviously it's a maker camp. So the community is more around what we do on the channel, but it was interesting to talk to people outside of just my family and friends who knew about our channel. And I was like, oh, that's crap. People actually watch this that are doing cool stuff.
Yeah. It's funny. It's Chad's the reason I learned about you guys was at that meeting. Cause he knew who you guys were.
Nice. Right on.
So yeah. But yeah, Tony and I met at the 2019 Maker Camp.
Oh, sweet. Right on.
Tony, Chad, and I all met there.
Yeah, we all met there.
Yeah, in line waiting to do something, blacksmithing or something, yeah, is how I met Tony.
Have you
but
guys?
Chad done just came over and started talking to me when I was sitting on a picnic table by myself.
He didn't
understand
that,
and
apparently.
They're new friends. What's that?
Yeah, you didn't have your pin on your shirt.
Well, I didn't have a platform to get this new friends thing out there, so I made a new friend from Georgia.
Damn it.
He called me Letterkenny at one point in time. And
nice.
That didn't go over so well.
He got a little scared. I turned around quite sharply and hollered something. I can't remember what I said, but his eyes got really big.
It wasn't so much that Tony turned around and yelled something, but his girlfriend was there and grabbed him like it was going to be an issue.
Nice.
That's where it was. Like if the girl's gonna hold them back or try to right off the bat, you wonder, did I make a grave mistake or not?
Little does he know that I'm not very aggressive. Yeah. Little did he know, I guess. I'm not a very aggressive.
I met you like
person.
10 minutes prior.
Yeah.
It was a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
That year, that 2019 year, we actually were up in Ottawa, up in Canada, at our cousin's wedding. It was that same weekend and I had heard about Maker Camp and I was like, oh, I really want to do this thing. And then my, you know, it was like, I think I had heard about Maker Camp and I looked at my calendar and was like, oh wait, when's this weekend? And I was like, oh, it's the same weekend as my cousin's wedding. So I said to my wife, I was like, hey, do you think we could take like a 7-hour detour on the way home to go over to New York? It's like, unfortunately not, but that's why I missed that first year. But then the next year after, I told Devin, I was like, we 100% have to go to Maker Camp in 2020. It looks so awesome. Everyone's been talking about it. We missed it because of the wedding. And then there was no 2020. So then it was like 2021. So
yeah.
But. Yeah. I think you guys are one of the first channels that actually put a video out about camp.
Yeah.
Cause that's what I think I remember.
Yeah. That was,
I can't remember
if there was anything. Camp. Yeah. The 2021. Yeah. So that was that's always the basis of going to a big event. Devin's like, we got to shoot something. He's like, I want to capture it. I want people to know what happened. He's like, you got to do at least 17 intros and you got to do.
That's not on me. That's on you, really. You do it perfect. We'll just do one.
He caught it all on film. You just did your part wrong. It was exposed properly.
Yeah, right. I got it all. No, that was a good one. I like that. That first year was fun. I mean, like I said, it's gotten bigger each year, but it hasn't really felt that way. You know, it still feels like a smaller event. It still feels like, you get these kind of intimate circles of just kind of fun groups of people hanging out and chatting and talking and catching up. And I was definitely very happy to be teaching, doing bow making demonstrations and stuff last year. And I'll be doing it again this year. But I will say that if I thought I had talked a lot the years before, I hadn't talked nearly as much as I talked when I was actually demoing. Cause then by the end of the weekend, my voice was so strained. I was like, man, you think I'm just there talking to people and chatting and conversing until like 3 o'clock every morning. But when you're actually demonstrating for multiple hours per day.
I can't imagine what that's like for you. I mean, just the 3-4 hours where I have to scream at everyone at the swap table. I lose my voice by Sunday night. And there's something about like when you're presenting or doing what we do there and you're on, like you're switched on for people. Like there's no real like downtime during that time. So at night you're trying to decompress, but you still want to be in all the conversations. So like it really is exhausting. Like it's a different type of exhaustion than like a tired exhausted.
That's why camera work's fun. People just they let you go where you want to go and they kind of leave you alone. They kind of get out of the way or duck out of the way and you don't really have to talk to anybody.
Are you gonna make it this year or are you gonna hang out?
I'll be there because someone needs to document what Dustin does, because last year there's no one knows he was there because there's no documentation at all. He went offline for days. And
so we did I think last year was the third year, Tony.
Yeah.
And it was the first year we had documentation of ours because we had to enlist Patsy Dobbs to come and do video and photos for us. Cause when you're there, you're not thinking about pulling out your camera or
you need
phone
somebody.
Or whatever. It's just, you're busy. You're on,
Yeah, fortunately, I think I posted about it, and Noah Vachon, the knife maker, he actually reached out and he had a couple videos of me doing some bow making demo. So he sent me that, which is good. So I got little clips of it. The last thing on the last day, so I did, I did Friday and Saturday. I don't know if I did any Sunday. Maybe I did Sunday as well. I can't remember, but I did like 1 hour demos twice a day. And the very last one I was doing like finished tillering on the bow. So just finishing up all the last little bits of like tillering to make the limbs bend evenly. I had a bow that was pretty much done.
And you broke it.
And I broke it in the last like 3 minutes of the demo, which, as far as the demo goes, it's a perfect time to break it.
That's a good end.
I was right at the end. Yeah, right. It was like a lady screamed and stuff. It was awesome.
Think about the storyline for that video, though.
Oh,
had it been documented.
Been. You won't believe what happened.
7 hours of making this bow in front of 1,000 people, doing it right, and then at the last second, you're putting the string on and boom.
Yeah.
Would have been a perfect video.
I know. If only
we already did that.
Only somebody has a video.
This year, I'm gonna cut little tiny, minuscule cracks in it so it's breaks at the end. Or just fray the string.
The string so explodes.
If it doesn't work, just get Tony to come over and, you know, strongman that thing into submission.
Well, we do want to do a little, I don't know if we can schedule it. You might have to talk to Austin Dust. We want to do like some type of shoot off type of thing, right? Contest one of the days, maybe on Saturday. So Keith, if you want to come over, we'll have some of the different presenters and whoever is free, we'll get like have a little competition. It'll be fun.
I'm in.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So what, we're at like an hour. I don't know. We don't have to do, we can do the disaster stories another time, Dust, if you want.
Yeah, we can skip that. Yeah.
No, wait till Wednesday and you'll get the disaster stories on the Working Hands podcast.
Okay, all right. There you go. Nice. Awesome. Well, we'll kind of wrap up our first half of the AOC podcast with recommendations. So Dev, did you figure out a recommendation?
No, you go first.
Okay. Well, Keith and Tony, I'll give you guys another minute if you need some time to figure out a recommendation, but, my recommendation this week is a YouTube channel and an Instagram channel called Truck House Life. There's a guy, Tim Johnson. He has this awesome F-350 super diesel truck that he converted and made a little tiny house on the back of it. And he drives all over. I started watching him because he was doing videos up in like Alaska, driving up like north of the Arctic Circle and stuff. And in this crazy little house, this little tiny house that he's got on the back of his truck. And he took the bed off the truck, built a little house on the back of the truck, and then converted the bed into a trailer. So he has the trailer to pull behind it, and he's got like a snow bike and stuff he'll take with him occasionally, but it's pretty sweet. And then he also has, so he puts those videos up on YouTube, and he also has been doing some conversion on his own actual house that he has. He's got like a normal house, but it's pretty sweet. So he's been doing some different kind of home renovation videos, building the schoolhouse, but also just his wild travels through crazy places on the back of his truck. So check him out. Again, his name's Tim Johnson, and the channel is Truck House Life. Pretty cool stuff.
All right. I'll do one I think I've suggested before, but they just put more episodes on YouTube. The show Grand Designs. It's a British show. And they, I think it's been on for like 25 seasons. And they take it from, they meet up with these families of these people who want to build a new house. And they go through the whole process. And the host is really good. Kevin MacLeod, he's like an architect, but he's really good and kind of funny and like, he's just a great presenter, and they go through the whole project. So it's not like, hey, most shows are like, hey, we're going to do a bathroom this episode. No, it's the whole house. And they're usually like more modern houses with really interesting things. And, you know, it'll be a good one when it's like, when it starts in like 2015 and you know, it's a new season. You're like, oh, okay. So it's going to be a 5-year episode of this show. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see all types of crazy stuff. So they just, Grand Designs, put a bunch of episodes on YouTube. You can probably watch 15 seasons of it on YouTube now. It's one of the best like home improvement quote unquote shows that I've ever watched. So Grand Designs.
Nice. All right, Keith or Tony, do you guys have any other home renovation channels we can recommend? Grand Designs, a Truck House Life.
No, I've been kind of off the Instagram kind of stuff lately. But for some reason this sticks in my head, but I watched, what was it on Netflix? Is that the latest, Beverly Hills Cop movie? It was actually, nice. It was fun. It was just fun. Okay. It's not great. It's not, maybe not even good, but it was just fun. Nice. Just got to watch Axel Foley do like Eddie Murphy do his thing. Mm-hmm. And it was fun.
Nice. Awesome. That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, no, it's good to see him back in anything. So, yeah, I'll watch it.
Yeah. All right, Keith, what do you got?
Just like Devin says, don't start listing people because you're going to miss one. So I'm gonna recommend an event. I'm going to recommend the Timber Inn at the Maker Camp. Go nice. Buy a ticket. Come on out. If you've never done it before, that's fine. I had never done it before. I went last year, and I loved it. It's probably one of my favorite events up there. So that's coming up at the end of the month. So I think there's still spots available. There was yesterday anyway. So if you're somewhat local and can spend a weekend away, I highly recommend it.
That's awesome. What's the ticket cost for the Timber Inn?
I think it's like three something.
Okay.
But that's and that room and
yeah, that includes and room, food, everything in the class. Food,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great deal. Yeah. We talked to Jim about it. We had him on a few weeks ago. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It whatever the price is, it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. It's a bonding experience with whoever else is there that you're working with.
Yeah. I was just mentioning to Devin that I want to do more of the smaller events up at Blackthorn because they're that much more intimate. You know, that's like these small groups, you get a handful of people all working together. You get to know these people a little bit better. So it's cool.
I've done them all this year. Well, nice. I shouldn't say that. I went to the group Forge and watched it.
You didn't participate?
I did not participate in that one, but I was there.
Nice.
I did all the others. They're all absolutely fantastic.
Nice.
I highly recommend all the intensive courses they do there. The group projects are fun though, like the Timber Inn and Group Forge.
Listening to Chris talk about the Group Forge and saying how much fun it was and how his design kind of changed and morphed throughout the class to change to make, you know, to you guys did the wood rack, right? To go next to the fire pit. Yeah. And he said how cool it was just to have everyone working on it and everyone kind of feeling confident and doing their thing and, you know, just doing stuff and making things and changing things and, you know, just letting it kind of unfold naturally, which is super cool.
This is going to sound odd coming from the new friends guy, but when you do a group project like that, you definitely form bonds and friendships with the people who are also in the class. That's like unmatched than just going to a social gathering like Maker Camp or some of those other things, you know.
I have more people that I reach out to and talk to like on the daily from those classes than I do from camp.
Yeah, we had a little bit of that experience from doing the timber framing structure work, you know, with Justin, like him. And I actually went, but the first time I was at Blackthorn was for that first Timber Inn when we were going to do we did the gazebo, which was ended up being, did it for Aaron Mattia and
dedicated.
Dedicated. There you go. And, actually was like, I was up in Lake George, New York. So I came down just for a couple hours. I was on vacation. So I came down for a couple hours and met a few people and hung out and did a few things. But then that like being at camp and working on the timber framing structure, same thing. It's that there's this kind of smaller group of people and you're all really working pretty close together. And, there's a bond there. That's pretty interesting. And one of the cool things about that is that you get this group of people that all love to make things. So there's nobody just like slacking, just hanging around, not doing anything like Keith at the, you know, at the Group Forge. But
I had my feet up. I sat next to the fire the whole time. I watched those guys work.
Like I said, just be a camera guy and, you know, no one asks you to do anything. You just, we were happy to have you around. What weekend is that? Do you know?
Weekend of the 20th, whatever the 20th is, it's next weekend.
Oh right, we're camping, right? We'll be our own family camp, O'Hara camp.
We are.
Yep. You can miss it. You've known those guys for years. You can miss it.
Tony said family doesn't matter. I heard it earlier, so
I said family does matter. I had your back on the family does side of things.
And then headphones. I got wonky headphones. I'm a trick ear.
No new friends.
Sweet. All right. Well, let's wrap it up real quick. So again, this is part one of the Mashup podcast with us and Working Heads podcast. So we're going to finish up our podcast now, and then we'll go into part two. And if you want to listen to that, make sure you're subscribed and find Working Head podcast on, I'm sure, all of the normal podcasts platforms. Make sure you don't forget to check out what we do over the Art of Craftsmanship on YouTube. We love sending everybody over there because that's what we love to do, make videos, make things, and show people what we do. Sometimes how-to videos, sometimes just follow along with maybe not how to do it. But so you can find us there, and then you can find Devin and I on myself on the Art of Craftsmanship on Instagram at the Art of Craftsmanship, and Devin at the Art of Camera Guy. Keith and Tony, where can people find you on Instagram or online or those things?
So for me, it's just Instagram is where you'll find me for most things. So it's just Woodland Iron, and yeah, and cool. The Working Hands podcast too. But
yeah,
yeah, I'm Blackthorn Concepts on Instagram. I think TikTok, but I don't use that. And Working Hands podcast on Instagram, and any podcatcher of your choice.
Sweet. What was the Instagram handle again? Dustin, cut you off.
Blackthorn Concepts.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Nice. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, like I said, check out part two. If you want to hear the rest of the story, you can hear some disaster stuff. And then our conversation with Keith and Tony on part two. Everybody listening, if you're coming over and you're listening because you listened to part two first on Working Hands Podcast, and now you're over here, welcome. And thanks for listening. And we'll talk to everybody next time.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at CedarPoint.com.